In chapter 30, we'll be talking about skin pathology. We'll start off by talking about disorders of pigmentation. Now, there are four potential lesions that they can ask you about on the exam. The first one is called vitiligo. Characteristically, you'll see irregular areas of complete depigmentation within the skin. It's most easily identified in patients that are African American because they have more pigment, but you can also see it in Caucasians, especially after they've gotten a suntan. If you biopsy the area, you will see that the area is completely devoid of melanocytes. Next lesion that they've asked about is melasma, also known as the mask of pregnancy. Now, this is characterized by these irregular, blotchy areas of hyperpigmentation. It usually occurs around the eyes, and the characteristic patient is going to be somebody on oral contraceptives or someone who's pregnant. The good thing about these is when you're after you deliver or if you withdraw the oral contraceptives, a lot of times the pigmentation will go away. The next one in this category are freckles, a very common lesion, especially in fair-skinned individuals. They're characterized by light brown to red macules, very common on the face, on the chest, and also on the back. Characteristic change in these lesions is that they will vary depending on the season. When patients go out in the sunlight, they tend to get darker. When they're indoors for long periods of time, it tends to fade away. If you did a biopsy of one of these lesions, you will see the normal number of melanocytes, but there is an increased production of melanin, both within the melanocytes and also within the keratinocytes as well. Final lesion in this category is called a benign lentigo. This is a hyperplasia of the melanocytes. And basically, if you did a biopsy along the basal layer of the epidermis, you will see a linear proliferation of melanocytes. How does it look grossly? They look like brown oval macules. Let's move on to melanocytic tumors. There are four major types that we need to talk about. First one we'll talk about is congenital nevi, also known as birthmarks. Obviously, these will be present from birth. They can be quite large in size. And the one thing that the board has asked about in the past is the large ones, the giant birthmarks. There's an increased risk of developing melanoma. So you want to follow those patients very closely. The next lesion in your handout is called a nevocellular nevus. Basically, this is an acquired mole. It's a benign tumor of melanocytes. It's related to sun exposure, and there are three major histologic types. There's the junctional, the compound, and the intradermal type. Grossly, they tend to be very sharply demarcated. They tend to be very uniform in color. They're usually dark tan to brown in color. And finally, they tend to be very stable. They don't usually change over time. And they usually do not transform into malignancy. The next one in your handout is called the dysplastic nevi, also known as BK moles. This one is important because on the exam, if they give you somebody with a dysplastic nevus, they're telling you that the nevus is irregular, it's got a regular border, it can have an irregular pigmentation. But the important thing is that if you have more than one of these, you may have what's called the dysplastic nevus syndrome. This is an autosomal dominant disorder. There is a mutation on chromosome 1 in the CMM1 gene, and these patients are at increased risk of developing melanoma. Last tumor we've got to talk about is malignant melanoma. The incidence of this tumor is increasing at a rapid rate in the United States. It tends to affect older individuals, 40s and up. The risk factors, the big one is chronic sun exposure. And on the exam, they love to give you a child who's had lots of chronic sun exposure and lots of sunburns. It's a big risk factor for this tumor. It's also more common in patients who are fair-skinned and patients who've had the dysplastic nevus syndrome. Let's talk about the gross. Melanomas tend to have a very characteristic appearance. Let's use a photograph to illustrate. Here's a resection specimen from a patient who had a malignant melanoma. I want you to notice that this tends to be very asymmetrical. Notice it has irregular borders. Also notice the color tends to vary. There's areas that are black and areas that are lighter brown. Notice also the diameter. There's not a ruler here, but these tend to be larger than 6 millimeters in diameter. And finally, they tend to be enlarging. So if you ask the patient about this lesion, they usually tell you that it's getting larger and larger. It may also become elevated or contain nodules. Now, where do they occur? Where in the body? In men, they tend to get them on the upper back. Females also get them in the back and the lower legs. Now, let's talk about the major types. The first type is called lentigo maligna melanoma. For this one, I want you to remember it occurs in the face of older individuals. It also has an excellent prognosis. The next variant is the most common variant. It's called superficial spreading melanoma. The important thing about this one is it has a horizontal growth pattern. It's growing along the skin, not down. Okay. The next category is called acral lentiginous melanoma. For this one, it tends to occur in African Americans. It usually occurs on the extremities, so on the palms and soles of the feet. The last one is the most malignant. It's called the nodular melanoma. The tumor tends to form a nodule because it is now growing downwards. It's having what's called vertical growth. And that is very worrisome because as it grows down, it now gains access to the vascular structures and can now metastasize. So remember, nodular melanoma has the worst prognosis. Now, for the prognosis, again, the depth of invasion is most important. How do we measure depth of invasion? Well, we use two criteria. One is called Breslow's thickness, the other is called Clark's level. On the exam, if they ask which is more important for prognostic implications, the answer is Breslow's. You actually use a ruler and give a specific measurement. It's more accurate. It's more prognostically important. Let's go on to the treatment. If you remember the picture I just showed you, the treatment for these tumors is a wide surgical excision. You got to get good margins on these patients. For systemic involvement, you use chemotherapy and immunotherapy as well. Let's change gears now and move to epidermal and dermal lesions. In this category, there are three major diseases we need to talk about. The first one is called acanthosis nigrans. For this one, you tend to get areas of hyperpigmentation and thickening of the skin. Usually occurs in the axilla and also the inguinal regions. The reason the board likes this one is because when you see this area of hyperpigmentation in the axilla, you gotta be worried about an internal malignancy. Okay, it's usually a great indicator for an internal tumor. The next one in this category is called a seborrheic keratosis. This is a benign squamous proliferative neoplasm. It's very common in the middle age and older individuals. Where in their bodies? Tends to occur in their face and trunk most commonly. What does it look like? It's got a very characteristic appearance. It tends to be coin-shaped plaques and nodules, tends to have a brown, greasy, or granular appearance, and it tends to have a stuck-on appearance. It looks like you can actually pick it off, or at least you should be able to pick it off. Okay, but you can't. It's a tumor. It's attached. Under the microscope, you'll see a hyperplasia of the basal epidermis. You'll also see what's called horn cysts. These are basically cysts that are filled with keratin. Now for the treatment, they're completely benign. They just look cosmetically not very pleasing. So you can move them if they become irritated or infected, or if they're not cosmetically acceptable. But again, they're completely benign. Last thing I want you to remember about seborrheic keratosis. If on the exam they give you a patient who suddenly develops a lot of them, we call that the sign of lesser trilat. That is a sign of an underlying malignancy. The last disorder I want to talk about in this category is psoriasis. It affects 1% of the United States. The most common form is called psoriasis vulgaris. There is a clear genetic component, and it may be associated with arthritis, enteropathy, and myopathies as well. Let's look at the growths. Tends to occur at the elbows, the knees, and the scalps most commonly. Grossly, you'll see these erythematous plaques that have a silvery scale. That's a classic description for this condition. If you actually pick off the scale, pick it off and remove it, you'll see what's called Asput sign. Basically, you'll see pinpoint bleeding where the plaque was. And finally, for the pathogenesis, we don't know the cause, but there is an increase in epidermal turnover. The epidermis is turning over unbelievably. Under the microscope, you will see this proliferation. You'll see what's called epidermal hyperplasia. You'll see parakeratosis. You'll see elongation and thickening of the reedy ridges. And the final thing that you want to see, and you should star this in your notes, is microabscesses in the superficial parakeratotic layers. We call those Monroe's microabscesses. How do you treat this condition? Well, a number of different things. Steroids is big, and ultraviolet light is also very useful. If it doesn't respond, you can use methotrexate. Let's move now and talk about the malignant tumors. There are four major tumors. The first is a squamous cell carcinoma of the skin. It's common in older individuals. Take a look at the risk factors. Sunlight, especially UV rays. Patients who have fair complexions. Patients who have chronic skin ulcers or draining sinus tracts have an increased risk. Next is exposure to various carcinogens. Remember arsenic. Remember hydrocarbons. Also patients who have burns or radiations exposure. And finally, patients who have immunosuppression and a disease called xeroderma pigmentosa, basically DNA repair defect. Let's look at some of the precursor lesions for squamous cell carcinoma. One is called actinic keratosis. It's basically dysplasia of the epidermis. So the keratinocytes will look atypical. And what does it look like grossly? It basically looks like sandpaper. You see these red, rough areas, usually on the hands, face, on the upper ear, all these sun-exposed locations. Now let's talk about squamous cell cancers. They tend to invade, so microscopically you'll see nests of atypical keratinocytes invading the dermis. The other two features which you'll characteristically see is squamous cell tumors in general produce keratin, and you'll see keratin pearls. The other finding is keratinocytes tend to have desmosomes, so you'll see what's called intercellular bridges. Intercellular bridges. Next page. Now, this is a malignant tumor. It does have the potential to metastasize. The good news is, most of the time, it does not metastasize. And you can just locally remove it. The patient is cured in most cases. One variant I'd like you to know about, it's called keratoacanthoma. It's a well-differentiated squamous cell cancer. It usually occurs on the hands. And what does it look like? It tends to look like a crater, sort of like a volcano. And the characteristic presentation is it comes on very rapidly. You'll see this crater-like area, and then it will commonly spontaneously regress and go away on its own. Okay, keratoacanthoma. The next tumor is called a basal cell carcinoma. This is the most common malignant tumor in man. It's most common in middle-aged individuals and elderly patients. Risk factors are pretty similar to squamous cell. Again, chronic sun exposure, fair complexion, immunosuppression, and xeroderma pigmentosa. Grossly, it tends to occur again in sun-exposed areas. So again, on the head and neck and the extremities. What does it look like? Well, people describe it as looking like a pearl. They call it a pearly papule. It has a nice smooth surface. You can see a lot of blood vessels running on the surface. We call it telangiectasia. It can also become ulcerated as well. We call those rodent ulcers. Microscopically, it has a very characteristic appearance. You'll see a proliferation of basal cells in what's called a palisading growth pattern. For prognosis, can it metastasize? Yeah, it can, but it's more likely to be locally aggressive. So the treatment is local excision. Unfortunately, most of these cases do not metastasize. The next tumor in the handout is called histiocytosis X. This is a tumor of Langerhans cells. Remember, Langerhans cells are the antigen-presenting cells in the epidermis. They're a form of a histiocyte. There are three different clinical variants. There's the unifocal type, multifocal type, and disseminated type. The thing I want you to remember about this is, one, it's a tumor of Langhans cell. Number two, it stains with CD1A. And the last thing I want you to remember is, if they talk about electron microscopy, within the cytoplasm you will see what's called Burbeck granules. They're granules that actually look like tennis rackets. Last tumor I want to talk about is mycosis fungoides. This is a cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. It tends to affect adult males most commonly, usually over age 40. It tends to involve the trunk, the extremities, and the face. And grossly, it tends to present as a rash initially. Then it can go on to ulcerate and form nodules and plaques. Now, if you took a biopsy of the skin, you tend to see a proliferation of T cells within the dermis. The T cells have a tropism, though, for the epidermis. And you will see the T cells actually go up into the epidermis and actually form collections. We call these Pautrier's microabscesses. Now, this is sort of a misnomer, because a normal abscess should contain neutrophils. Okay, but in a Pautrier's microabscess, you see a collection of T lymphocytes, just the neoplastic cells. Last thing I want you to remember about mycosis fungoides is it usually involves the skin, but eventually it can go into the blood. When it goes into the blood, we call it the Sézary syndrome. And you'll see the circulating T cells, we call them Sézary cells. That completes chapter 30, skin pathology. That also completes the pathology course. I wish you the best of luck. Enjoy pathology. Use it well. It'll serve you well on the exam. Have a great day.